This is Armand Demel with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Talk about positive reactions. Interesting. Interesting being around for so long. We're going to start off with a quote by Linda Vanellas. Was that your grandmother? Okay, what did your grandmother have to say?
Well, my grandmother, who lived to an old age of 105, we just laid her to rest a few years ago, she always said to me when I hit 50, she was quoted as often saying to me that the second half is so much better than the first half. The first half is sort of practice. We sort of knock ourselves out trying to figure out what we should be doing, what we should not be doing. But that the second half of life, the 50 and over, you're more relaxed, you're more at ease with yourself, and it's really time to sit back and enjoy.
So it seems that wise person, if that was wise, is that really true? This is very interesting because yesterday when people called, they asked, does it get better? Because a lot of people are very unhappy, and they don't know if they have anything to look for or just more of the same. We have a very high rate of suicide among elder people. Maybe because they don't know it's going to get better, or maybe they don't think it's going to get better, or maybe because it doesn't get better. So I want to go over some of the different psychiatric conditions, psychological conditions, and I've invited in our master in this area, Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. Hi, Kent.
Hi, good to be here.
Good, huh? Nice to have you back. So, Kent, here's a question that people ask. Let me start off with why they said. They said, if you start off unhappy, right, as a kid, and as you get a little older, you get happier and happier and happier, or do you get sadder and sadder and sadder? There are different conditions that could work on you. One, for example, could be a hormonal, or it could be just a chemical imbalance. And you could have an imbalance, and it could lead you to a thing like called bipolar disorder or something like that, which they've kind of proven has a real physiological thing. You can spend your time doing nutrition, exercise, health orientation, and medication, and therapy, and you're not at the mercy of it in your later life, possibly. There's a condition called schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is, phew, that's whacked. In the past, there was no hope for schizophrenia. That meant you lock him up, put him away, put him in with a bunch of other people who flew over the cuckoo's nest. That's exactly the way it belongs. And there was no hope. Nowadays, it's very different. And in a lot of conditions that people suffer, including depression, things get better just over time. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. But first, let's introduce Kent. And Kent, your perception of this as you've seen it.
Well, again, you're saying certainly there are certain conditions, psychiatric conditions, that cause people a great deal of suffering, that it is true in the last 30, 40 years, certainly as it relates to medication, there has been a lot of hope and a lot of encouragement that people who have, again, the dramatic mood swings of bipolar, the obsessional, anxious thoughts that go along with the syndrome called obsessive compulsive disorder, and as you're saying, the schizophrenic condition where people's minds play tricks on them and they're not in touch with reality and having very painful sort of paranoid or irrational thoughts, it's true that medication has been a revolution for those people, and they're able to live much more comfortable and happier lives in the last 30, 40 years as due to these medications that have only been around.
Let's make a point for nutrition. It also has been remarkable because people are living longer because they're not so... they're more aware of unhealthy conditions and stuff like that as well. So we have the physical and the emotional, which are led by all of the physical awarenesses, which include the medications. the medications and the health orientation, right, has made quite a difference among people. But now let's look at just pure meds. Pure meds, I mean, a person who was schizophrenic 20 years ago, 30 years ago, what do they have? Haldol, what did we have available?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as you're saying, that prior to these medications, people would be in institutions unable to function because they would be tormented with their thoughts that were irrational and painful and their mind playing tricks on them with hallucinations, meaning hearing things or seeing things that weren't there in a very frightening, painful world. The medications that have become available have made many of these people function a great deal better because it puts away all these irrational thoughts and misperceptions, so they're able to function in a way that they couldn't 30, 40, 50 years ago.
With the Dr. Kent Robinshaw and Linda Vanella. But you see, Kent, in this as well, when a person was 30 to 40 years ago, you're in love, you love your mother. Mm-hmm. Your mother starts falling apart. You never knew that at later life, late onset schizophrenia, which is a condition in psychiatry, late onset. What do you mean late onset? How can that happen late? It's supposed to happen early, right? But for some people, 40, 50 years old, they start hallucinating. Now, we don't know if that's because they go through menopause and there are changes that take place or physical changes that lead to it. It could be that the chemistry of the body somehow interacts with the chemistry of the mind. Now you watch somebody you love and care for decompensating. That's the word they use. Decompensating, meaning it just isn't working anymore, and they fall apart more and more and more, and they're more and more unhappy. You're married to somebody who's decompensating, and you wonder, how do I help this person? What do I do for this person? In the past, there was very little you could do. Lock them up, put them away, put them in a hospital, medicate them heavily, let them walk around like zombies, you know, and that was the best we could do. Nowadays, the medications have enabled people to be actually step out of the hospitals, you know, and to be able to at least be in the world and to be loved by and to love people in their families. Is this a case for medication? No. Because I believe that people get better also. Anyway, I believe there are three major factors that work at helping people deal better psychologically as they get older. The first one is burnout. You know, if you've got a disorder, if you're nervous, if you worry too much, if you're paranoid, if you're fightful, if you're fearful, if you're angry, that takes up so much energy that eventually you burn yourself out doing it. You feel yourself, let's say you're, you know, you obsessive compulsive disorder and you're checking the doors, or let's say you got a sexual disorder and you go engaged in these sexual compulsions over and over and over and over and over again. Well, after a million times, a thousand times, you get tired. You wear it out a little bit. You go, oh, yeah, that's just one more time. Oh, no, one more time. So number one is burnout. The second thing that interferes, that helps us change, is learning. We learn things like, hey, you know, I've been somebody who's drunk too much and I go to the point of blackouts when I drink. But I notice every time I go to a bar and I sit at a bar, I tend to have I drink too much. So, you know, I think I'm going to not go to the bar. I'll go to the health club instead. So you learn how to control your own propensity for the illness by learning things that are connected to it. So you could walk around really with one foot over the line. You could walk around being a little weird. You could be a little strange in your thinking. You could be somebody who thinks outside the box all the time and couldn't even imagine fitting in the box. You could be that way, but there's a difficulty. You have to avoid personal relationships. Relationships, they're difficult. Because in a personal relationship, you just can't get away from yourself. See, when you're living alone and you're in your house alone and you watch television and there's nobody there but your dog and the TV, and a bottle of liquor or something. I mean, you're fine. You could just go through day after day after day like that. But you have somebody in the house who you're reacting to, who's reacting to you, who needs you, who you want to fight off. And this makes it more difficult. So what people do, what many people do when they have some severe psychological compulsions, things driving them, they avoid relationships. They just don't have them. They live alone, or they just have somebody who... I know one man who married somebody who didn't speak English at all, and he never wanted her to learn English because he could be private. He could be on his own. He stayed down in his basement all the time. This is Armando Mill here with you with Positive Mind, Linda Bonella. Linda, it happens as well with depression, right?
Yes, it does, Armand. Depression... It's interesting because we hear so much about it from both the young and the older populations that we service. But almost 10% of our population over the age of 18 suffers with some form of depression disorder. Living in this developed country like ours seems to put us more at risk, as 15% on average of the population of developed countries do have it. This may lead some to deduce that there may be something in our development that creates a depressive response, which is very interesting.
What do you mean by our development, Linda?
Okay, in a depressive, well, in our development, such as the way that we live, we live in a country that that's very highly developed, that's highly sophisticated, so that we have more at our fingertips. We have more demands along with the things that we have. We have more demands. We have more expectations. We come to an age where we should be going to college, performing. So there's a lot of other things that are going on in our life that complicate our life and, of course, demand from us. So while you're speaking about the person who could go off, be by themselves, that's not the typical expectation in such a developed country as ours. Once a teenager becomes of adolescent age, we're looking to performance and grades and where are they going to college and what kind of a job are they going to have, how much money are they going to achieve. So there are a lot of really stresses placed upon an individual, unlike if you're living in a third world nation where you wouldn't have those kinds of stressors.
Mm-hmm. Kent?
Yeah, I think that there's an idea that the more complicated our life has gotten and is in developed country, the more stress it causes. So even though we have, you know, cell phones and we have computers and we have ways of connecting so many different ways and so many different options, all those options and all those choices make people stressed and anxious. And it may be true that when we had much simpler lives, people were more at peace, more accepting and happier, as opposed to much more complicated.
And lived a shorter life. Mm. You see, it's very important that you live to 45 years old, and that's the end of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, there's not much. You get to the final, you get to this, you don't have much to test after that. So they would live half as long. See, I think from the beginning, Kent, I think every animal, when it's under stress, does one thing. They try to organize. They always try to control their environment. If a dog is under stress, he's going to bark at you and show his teeth and say, stay away from me because I don't want any more stimulation right now. Right? Anybody who gets it, when a person gets under stress, the main thing they try to do is control their environment. I think what happens as we get older, as you go through time, is you learn how to control your environment better. And that part of what makes living with psychological bends, you know, where things are not right, where you worry a little too much or you're a little too compulsive or you're, you know, where your mind doesn't work as well as it should work, part of it is that you get in control of things. You learn how to control. Now, you were saying something about people who have social pressures, Kent.
Yeah, I think it really gets to Linda's quote from her grandmother, which was about people becoming more self-accepting and relaxed about who they are as time goes on, And that gets away with any pressure to be different than who you are. So just to be self-accepting. And certainly I treat a lot of people who are stressed and anxious about big groups of people, parties, it's holiday time, Christmas parties, where they feel very uncomfortable and stressed out and feel like they should, you know, this pressure that they should be able to go to a party with lots of people they don't know. And that's a sign of mental health and that's what they're striving for. Whereas I find as people, you know, move on in age and become more relaxed with who they are, they have a gentle acceptance that that's not who they are, that I'm a little bit of an introvert and I don't like big groups of people. So what? Like, I'm right-handed, I'm left-handed. It's okay. And so I control my environment by avoiding those kinds of things that I didn't before that would stress me out or I'd feel guilty about not going to big parties. Now, as time goes on, I'm much more relaxed. That's not me. That's my cousin. That's someone else. I'm very happy staying home, small groups of people, and much more safe and comfortable making those choices and very comfortable with who I am and who I'm not.
Interesting. A real estate developer I know, a real estate agent, his name is Bob Notion, has made an observation to me once about how different the people are that he sells homes to. And he talks about how it's really important for him to be able to perceive what that person sees as safety in when they're buying a home. He said that he's got to find their perception of safety. Because if it's an older person looking for safety and not expansion, he's going to get him something that feels safer, you know, and it really takes quite a skill to develop that that ability to observe at that level. So I think as we all get older, we try to become a little safer in our minds. Now, what about relationships? Should you have a relationship? Shouldn't you have a relationship? How many couples come to see me in the middle of, what am I doing in this relationship? I'm being crazy. And if I talk to people and they come and see me and they talk to me about it, they are being crazy. What are you doing in this thing? Why are you having such a bad time? Why are you living such a horror of a relationship? Why are you living in a house where your wife hates you? You know, why are you in relationship with children who don't want to talk to you at all? What's going on? What do you mean your kids don't want to talk to you? Get in touch with your kids and talk to them. Why? And because what you find behind it are these little bends in the mind. Because I'm a broken toy. Because I don't know how to do it. So then how do you get through life? Well, you get through life trying to adapt in some way to your own personality idiosyncrasies. But at the same time, as you get older, it's less and less and less, and you become nicer and nicer and nicer. Now, there is an exception. Let's talk about dementia. Now, in dementia, does it get better and better and better? No. It gets what looks like worse and worse and worse, but it gets worse and worse and worse for the caretaker, not for the person. Because kind of, as you think about it with dementia, you get freer and freer and freer than you do get, then does, of course, person taking care of you. That's a different story. They get more and more trapped, and then they have to ask themselves the questions, what are they doing there? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about being a little crazy. And we're talking about how being a little crazy, which is your adaptation as a child and what you did, probably saved you from being really whacked out. You know, being a little crazy can stop you from going insane. There's a thing called, you know what pseudoneurosis? Do you ever use the word pseudoneurosis anymore, Ken?
Sure.
Or is that before your time?
No, I think it's... nothing's before my time. Only dinosaurs.
I'm before your time. What's a pseudoneurosis?
Well, meaning that it's actually an adaptive sort of structure to something. It's not a real neurosis that implies something against oneself or something that's pathological. It's actually something that's actually quite helpful or is helping the person. It's not against the person or causing psychic pain or emotional pain. It's actually something that's actually improving their lives.
One of the things that we were trained in spotting a pseudoneurosis is to make sure that underneath it you don't have a real serious disturbance. That what that person is doing something that looks slightly neurotic. But if you remove it, you might find something a lot more serious underneath it. That happens as well.
Can you give me an example of a pseudoneurosis, Kent?
Well, I think, again, something like somebody avoiding big crowds, something like I mentioned as before, and maybe somebody is just an introvert or somebody who feels more comfortable in more small groups and the like. So rather than say, oh, there's something pathological about that, then to say, no, that's the person's genetic or that's their personality, that's who they are, and there's nothing that should be made pathological about it.
Thank you.
Can give me a story about somebody who is full-blown delusional, right? Who comes to see you, who asks for help, or their family asks for help for them. Have you really, and I know you're going to tell the truth about it, have you seen medications actually take this away?
Oh, yeah. Particularly with bipolar disorder, again, not schizophrenia, but extreme mood swings. And sometimes in bipolar disorder, the extreme mood swings can get to the point where people are, again, psychotic. Their mind is playing tricks on them. And I have seen people with bipolar disorder who are psychotically thinking Lady Gaga is writing songs about them and that they have special powers on medications like lithium and other mood stabilizers able to function at the highest level. And I think there are actually people out in the public life that we don't know, and only their family and psychiatrists know, have a propensity to actually become psychotic. But these newer medications have kept people so that those disturbing and mind-playing tricks, thoughts, don't come back, and they're able to live quite rich lives.
Kind of an interesting thing about it too, when you have a dysfunctional mind, right, it usually has a kind of comorbidity that goes with it. You know, other parts of you start breaking down. If your mind doesn't work so well, your body doesn't work so well eventually over time.
Right.
And then it's hard to pay attention to what's the real disturbance here. Is it the mind or is it the body? Does the guy have a heart disorder or does the guy have an anxiety disorder? You know, and it's really hard to distinguish between the two. But eventually, over time, we do have this one evidence. People are living longer. And I don't know how we account for this. How do you account for people living longer, Kent?
Well, I think
what in your mind?
What's that? I think nutrition is a big part of it. I think that, you know, it's hard for us to imagine, you know, when they talk about the famine, you know, the potato famine in our, you know, that was like, a century ago that, you know, in the much of the world, lack of basic food and nutrients was a problem through most of human history. And now, you know, for the last, you know, 30, 40 years in America and now more and more around the world, it does seem like nutrition, basic nutrition, is much improved. And I assume that's one of, if not the most important factors, because it gets involved with the pregnancy, so that the pregnant mother is better nutrition and that produces healthier children. And then clearly, as people are not borderline starvation or not getting basic nutrients throughout their life, they're able to be much more physically healthy. I think it's not necessarily the medications for the more dramatic sort of illnesses, that it's really the basic increase in mortality has been nutrition.
Yeah, and I think as well we have, people as well have antibiotics, mm-hmm. which we didn't have. We have ways of staving off illnesses that would have killed people a long time ago. So here we are with a bunch of older people who have secret crazinesses. And it's all secret. I don't talk about it, right? I don't want to talk about it. All right. How is your feeling? I don't want to talk about that. That's pretty good. You control your own mind and you control your own behaviors when you're out there. That's pretty good. And eventually you could live just as well as anybody else, finding your own way of finding your own inner peace.
You know, Armand, I also think that there's, along with your nutrition, Kent, which I agree with you totally, but I also think that we, along with the good nutrition, we're producing, of course, better genes, and therefore it's we're learning, we're better educated, but there's also a greater and expansive support of each other that I think we see in our society, whereas years ago, even my grandmother will speak about, you know, in other countries, when a child was weak or a child was, they weren't really given the encouragement, the support, the education that oftentimes we do nurture. And so while we have medications, we have nutrition, we have yoga, we have so many different ways of supporting people who may in fact be dealing with some neurosis or some illness of the mind. And I think that we're much more tolerant and we're much more open and less prejudiced, so that people would be more likely to come in and speak to someone about what's troubling them. So I think that also contributes to a better, healthier, well-rounded person who's more likely to live longer.
Well, then comes that issue about talking to somebody. Linda, I'm glad you bring that up. In the old days, I like saying that, in the old days, you kept it to yourself. Now, there's a concept. You could talk to the bartender. You could talk to the taxi driver. You could talk to your priest. You could talk to a therapist. You could talk to anybody. Just don't talk to your doctor, because he doesn't want to be spending his time hearing your problems, right? But mainly, there are people to talk to. Now, as any responsible therapist, I just can't imagine how anybody doesn't imagine how important it is. And this goes back to what Bob Notion was saying about the importance of having the right communication with people. How do you not understand that even when you're selling a house to somebody, that they are critically, critically depending on you for a good interaction? They want to trust you so much. They want to open their hearts. So you could go through your life not trusting anybody. And then comes this new thing, which is called being able to talk to somebody. Now, I don't know how medication works without having somebody to talk to. And this, again, I'll ask you, Kent, because I know you're a talker. You know, I know you're not just in and out there with a prescription. Do you find it essential almost every time?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people feel like all they need to do is get the right chemical and the right prescription and everything's going to get better. And I think that's a real shortcut, and that's a real simple answer. Like I said, for some of the more severe psychiatric problems, the medication is almost a miracle, like penicillin is for streptococcal, you know, sort of infections. But for many anxious, depressive symptoms, medication will help, and help maybe short term, but nothing at all replaces having an empathic ear to sort of hear yourself talk and to have somebody to understand what you're going through and to help you understand and maybe come at peace with whatever problems are causing you anxiety or depression.
Armando Melilla, Linda Vidal, and Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. Hey, what about you? What about you and how your mood and how your time and your psyche has shifted over the years? We want to be able to take your calls when we come back from our break, and I want to hear from you and hear about how you've adjusted to yourself. Now, many of you feel like it's just getting worse and worse and worse, and maybe it is. But also, many of you have adjusted to bringing yourself to a better place, you know, where you can at least function. I meet more people nowadays, men and women, who when you ask them about a relationship, they say to you, I haven't had a relationship for 2 years. And the initial question I always have is, well, why not? What's the matter with you? But the truth is, maybe they're smart. Maybe it's the best thing you could be doing. Relationships make you crazy. If relationships make you crazy, do without one. Do without that kind of close contact with somebody else. You know, do it so that you could have your own space to go to at night. So that when you want to scream at the top of your lungs, you can. So that if you want to watch TV all night, you can. So you could do whatever you want and have control over your own life. So whereas I think a good relationship is essential for a feeling of joy in this world and happiness, I think you could feel pretty good without him as well. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. I'll play you a little music that just happens to be on the point. And then when we come back, we'll take your calls at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. We'll be right back.
New York.
I've always been crazy in the trouble that it's put me through. Been busted for things that I did and I didn't do. I can't say I'm proud of all of the things that I've done, but I can say I've never intentionally hurt anyone. I've always been different, with one foot over the line, winding up somewhere, one step ahead or behind. It ain't been so easy, but I guess I shouldn't complain. I've always been crazy, but it's kept me from going insane. Beautiful lady, are you sure that you understand the chances you're taking love in a free living man? Are you really sure want what you see? Be careful of something that's just what you want it to be.
Ellen Jennings, just because country music is never really represented here on my program, but I've always been crazy, but it's kept me from going insane. Kind of an interesting concept. This is Armand DeMille with you with Dr. Kent Robert Shaw and Linda Vanella. We're talking about how your mental challenges manifest over time, whether they get better or worse, and what happens. Well, Waylon Jennings made a, there was one line in here which just got me, where he said, I've never intentionally hurt anyone. When I think about people who walk around claiming to be, not claiming to be, I mean, they feel like the victims of other people. I mean, you could be the victim of an abusive father, one or another. It could be physical, sexual, it could be verbal. Are you the victim? Of course you're the victim in some way. Did that parent intentionally mean to hurt you? Well, in some cases, yes. In some cases, that person was just so whacked that they wanted to destroy somebody who they thought might be competition or something like that. But most people suffer as a result of a relationship, not because the other person was evil or bad, but because they were out of their minds. And because you chose to love someone who was bent, because you liked their bend, you know, because you liked the way they kind of moved. So if you meet somebody, let's say you meet somebody who's a married man and you have a relationship with him, and then he leaves his wife, and then he goes off with you, and then you find him cheating on you. Well, did he hurt you? Did he do something? I mean, or he was just being himself. You know, it's that story about the, have we done this one too many times? The story about the, well, I guess we have done it too many times. 212-209-2900, the scorpion and the frog crossing the river, right? Now we just have to nod our heads. It's the old scorpion frog story. Kent Robert Shaw. Kent, people come in and they say, I've been devastated. I have been devastated by my last relationship. My marriage devastated me. I trusted somebody who was not worthy of trusting, who betrayed me. For as long as you carry that in your mind, that's your own mental illness. Because the truth of it is, you married somebody and chose somebody. They didn't intentionally mean to hurt you. They were just part of what they did. Maybe they were out to hurt all people of that gender, you know? Maybe she was just a man killer because she wanted to kill all men, or a lady killer because he just wanted to kill all ladies. But whatever it was, it didn't have that kind of intention behind it. Because most people, when they are bent, do things that other people find hurtful. You know, so you blow somebody off, so you reject somebody, so you tell somebody, I don't want to see you anymore, so you go out with his best friend. The Tennessee Waltz. My God, the Tennessee Waltz. You know the Tennessee Waltz? The lyrics to the Tennessee Waltz. My God, I was out with a guy. This is the best song of 1945, which is George Clooney's mother was singing this, Rosemary Clooney. So the other day, I just happened to have it on, and I listened to the words, and the lyrics are the following. I was at a dance with the man I love, and I introduced him to a friend, and the friend danced with him and took him away from me, and for that reason, I remember the Tennessee Waltz all the time. Now, this is the lyrics to the song The Tennessee Waltz, which was the biggest pop seller. What I wanted to know is, why were people in 1945 finding this song such a wonderful song to sing all the time to each other? It was an odd time. It was an odd time in life, as every time is an odd time. So what's going on in the history, like right now, you know, who do you trust? Where are your banks? Where's your money? Where's your 401k? Every odd time leads to a different kind of psychiatric manifestation. And nobody's out there to intentionally hurt you. They just don't want you to take what's theirs, or they think is theirs. 212-209-2900. Any comment on that before we... Oops, I'm sorry, Kent.
Sure. I think two things that you said, very important. It really, I think, gives a lot of relaxation and freedom and gets rid of a lot of bile and hatred in people's bloodstream when they come to the acceptance that their parents, as flawed as they were, weren't intentionally out to hurt them, even though some of the mishigas, some of their craziness, some of their neurotic destructive parts of their personality, which were not of their choosing, right? It had to do with your grandparents and the like, just happened to cause some pain and dysfunction on your head. But it's hard and very freeing, I think, for people to understand your parents are often trying the best they can, given their own pain and suffering, their own struggles. And I find for a lot of people, when they understand that, they're less bitter, less feel like a victim about their childhoods, and they don't carry on like that anymore. And then I think the other thing you're saying about relationships, it's true, most people don't intentionally want to hurt somebody, like sadism intentionally, but a lot of people feel that in relationships, the craziness of the person I'm with, they're doing it on purpose. And I think that as people grow older, as time goes on, hopefully people get a certain maturity and understanding that these things are not done to me. They're not done to hurt me. They do it to other people. They do it to their sister. My wife does it to her sister, and she does it to her best friend. So the fact that she's doing it to me is not intentionally to make me angry and frustrated. It's who I married. It's part of their personality that I should have realized and not react to like it's against me.
And the trouble is, the two of you on your own separately, if it is a couple, the two of them separately may do fine without each other. But when they get close and they get intimate and when they get married and when they make the commitment and then they have babies, right, and they're committing to stay there and not run. Now, this is the big one, because in most people who live a, I'll say neurotic just because I need a better word, but, an odd life in their mind, they always have their exits. They're going to run. They're going to run away. They're going to run away. They're going to run away. They're not going to stand there and deal with it. Most mature people who you talk to, if it's somebody who's mature and mentally stable, they say, here's a problem. They say, okay, let's talk about it. All right, let's stay here. We'll stay in this room until we get done with this. Yeah, it may take us a few days. We'll order a pizza, but let's deal with it. And let's deal with it now. But most immature people, and by that I mean people who are slaves to their own fears, they run. Let me out of here. I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't get married. I can't run. See? And I think that's where a big difference gets. Now, if the two of them get together and he or she, who is normally a runner, says, I'm not going to run, she's constantly plagued with this, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. Or this very incredible phrase that comes over you once in a while, this no longer works for me. You hear everybody once in a while turn around and say to their mates, what it really means is, I don't know how to work through this one. So being with somebody who's a little bent will lead to having an unhappier life. Learning how to deal with it better or learning how to make better choices lead you to a happier life.
May I say one thing too, Amon, that I feel when you're speaking about that, I'm hearing, like, don't take it so personal. I think as you're saying, Kent, when you stand back and you look at someone, you say, well, it's not really about me. It's about them. It's about, where they're coming from or their anger or their disappointment or whatever it is. And I think it's when we can do that in any relationship is when we can come back and have the pizza and let's work it out. But it's when we take things so personal that we can't. We become frozen and oftentimes we go into that fight flight. Either I fight or I run. But it's not an objective, loving kind of response. So I think it's almost like don't take life so seriously and, don't take it so personal. Then I think we can hopefully get along a lot better.
Well, don't take it seriously is a very important thing you're saying. Because mostly it's not serious. Mostly it's not. Mostly the sign of the very disturbance, the thing, the depression, the mania, the dementia, all the things, it's because you're worried more than you should be worried. Because you're having regrets more than you should have regrets. Because you're attaching too much energy to something that's somewhat meaningless. But when you feel meaningless in life and you feel like you're invisible, you want to feel like something counts. So you pick something and you make that your meaning. I was with a young woman earlier today who I heard, she was just obsessing about her boyfriend. She could not say one word without saying his name. and he this, and he that, and he this, and he that. And every time I asked her about herself, she would switch it over to he, because it was almost like a deflection. It was almost like, I can't afford to look at myself, so I'm going to keep this relationship of grief around so that I could just talk about that all the time. Maybe we have time for a couple of calls. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
Hi, this is Mario in Bloomfield, New Jersey.
Hey, Mario.
Hi, I'm going through a crisis today, and I turned on the station, and God, you're absolutely speaking directly to me. I mean, I've been a runner in all my relationships. Now I'm married a year and a half, and I'm doing the same thing. Every 2 months, I'm telling my wife, I can't do this, I can't stay in this. And, you know, so many times I've told her this, and now it's coming to a point today or tomorrow where I don't know what to do. I just keep trying to run from this relationship. And
Mario, when you were a kid and you got angry, what was your response?
Yeah, I would run. I would just leave.
Run.
They were in an awful marriage. They just yelled at each other constantly, and I would just leave.
So the biggest difficulty you have is the following. Like Linda said, fight or flight. Yeah. You're no good at fighting, so you're good at flighting.
Right.
Right? So if we could teach you how to be good at fighting, then you wouldn't have to be flighting.
But then you also said, I mean, if someone's alone, I mean, when I was single for 8 years after my first divorce, I was relatively happy. Constantly dating, short-term relationships. And I was relatively happy then. And so that's the battle in my mind. Do I go back to that?
Absolutely. I understand completely, Mario.
And, you know, it's always fresh, a new relationship every other month. And that's the crisis.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Right, yeah. It was pretty good.
Okay, now on the other side, just give me, and I'm not trying to convince you to be the other way, but tell me one magnificent thing about having one person you love.
One magnificent thing.
Yeah, what's your wife's first name?
Jennifer.
Tell me one magnificent thing about being close to Jennifer.
I love traveling with her. I mean, I always hated driving or going places on my own. It's good to have a partner to travel with.
So you feel connected to something.
Yeah.
So look at that conundrum, boy. On one level, you love to be disconnected. On another level, you travel further when you're with somebody. Now, this is a good metaphor.
Yeah.
Because, you see, that's the way it is in life. When we stay in one place, I know a man who stays home and watches television. And anytime anybody asks him, do you ever travel? He says, I travel using my remote control.
That's what I did when I was single. You're right. Because there's no one to travel with. You're right.
Yeah. So just for the traveling partner and just to be able to explore new things with someone, it's great to have a partner. Now, maybe Jennifer's not the right partner. But it sounds to me like you've got two ways to go. And one way to go is to go back to isolation, which is okay, or to promise yourself 10 years from now you're going to go into isolation, which is fine, or to say to yourself, I want to travel with somebody, and I want to try to make this work.
Right. And now there's a lot of pressure of having children, and, you know, that's the crisis we're going through. I mean, should we be having children if I'm this ambivalent about staying married?
Yeah, you want the answer to that?
Yeah.
No.
You're right. That's what another therapist told me as well, right?
No.
Right.
Just because that shouldn't be the motive to keep it together, although you'd be amazed. Right. You'd be amazed at what happens when you have children.
Right.
A lot of people who can't get along...
She's a lot of pressure. I have children right now. She's 40 years old, and every month if she's not pregnant, it's a crisis.
Yeah.
It's the end of the world.
Well, it's not a crisis. So,
Armand, thank you so much.
Sure. My thanks for you calling in, Mario.
Thank you so much.
212-209-2900. That's classic. That's exactly what people go through all the time. I wish them luck. He does have that choice. But there is something about having babies, boy. I watched a good friend of mine, Mike. He had a baby girl the other day, and he was... I was talking to him. Well, you know about this too, don't you, Kent? About what it's like to... your life changes in the presence of an infant.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. Just unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Compare it to what you thought you knew before. Now, you're a very smart man. You're a psychiatrist. You've run so many programs. You're one of the most esteemed people in your profession. And then all of a sudden, you have a baby, and you're like a new person.
Well, it's the amount of love that I feel is just overwhelming. I mean, I love my wife and I love my friends, but it's just it's beyond my expectation about. And maybe it's just the trust or something. It's just the you know, no holds back, trusting, love, vulnerable, that you know, baby's not going to hurt me.
So you had no way of knowing that this feeling really existed. See, before then, you said, maybe I've been in love, I've had that kind of thing. But you had no idea of the incredible intensity that comes with this kind of loving. Now you just think about Mario. Mario says, I love traveling with Jennifer. And what a wonderful trip it would be if they could settle down to taking that journey together. Now, you had that as well, didn't you, Linda, with your babies?
Oh, of course, Armand.
You discovered a part about yourself.
Yes. A very deep part of yourself that...
Yourself?
Of myself came to surface, sure, when I had my children. It was a different part of life that's hard to explain, and I'm sure anyone who's had children can understand that. It's very difficult to put it into words. As Ken said, you love your husband, you love your parents, you love other people. But to have this newborn in your arms and that total unconditional, I guess it's like you say, Ken, vulnerability, and it's quite a different experience.
Yeah, I think that, again, you know, I have two children, that to say that children are not at times incredibly frustrating and incredibly difficult, but with them I seem to always have compassion and understanding and tolerance about what they're going through that I struggle with adult relationships, as we were talking about before, with people. You know, the real sense of somebody is frustrating, somebody is annoying, their craziness is making my life difficult. If I could have that kind of compassion and empathy towards adults that I have towards my children, I would be blissful. And maybe people have that. I'm trying to work towards that.
It's an amazing thing. So it's like a learning class. It's like a practice it here. You know, I think that's part of what's good about being a therapist, too. You get a chance to try it out before you do it yourself. So it's kind of remarkable, and there's all kinds of journeys we look forward to. And if any of you feel the kind of despair out there where you think nothing is ever going to get better, these changing things that take place, there's always an opportunity, and you don't have to. It'll find you. One day you'll wake up and you'll say, hey, my head is clear. Hey, I'm not so worried, you know, and you'll feel different. And whether you find true love or true babies, that's all right, that's nice. But if you find safety, you find comfort, and you find that some part of you has the capacity to extend itself to help another human being, whoa, what a gift you've been given. Armand DeMille, Linda Bonello, we're going to be back with you next Tuesday at an unusual time from 2 to 4 p.m. doing a special for WBAI during their fundraiser. So be sure to tune in by then. Thank you very much for being with us, Kent and Linda. Sorry, the rest of you whose calls I did not take.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Most welcome.
Be with you next Tuesday, my friends. Send an email if you want. Armand@thepositivemind.com.